Welcome, everybody, to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is your host, Tyler Yonke, episode 134. Thank you for joining us. On today's show, we're going to do a special Tour de France preview show, giving you an idea. Hey, the tour starts in July 6th. It's around every year in July. You might want to know what the route is going to be, what different stages are going to be like, who are the contenders, who do we think are going to be winning the sprint stages, the mountain stages, you got time trials. We'll go over all of that. We'll also give you a little bit of a brief history of the Tour de France itself, going back some 5, 15, 25, 50 years, just giving you some highlights, giving you a little bit of a nuance as to what this race is all about and some of its history. So we'll do some things that make you go, and then I'll also give you some Tour de France resources, some areas to look for if you want to find some other podcasts and streaming online. We'll do it all for you here coming up. Thank you once again for joining us on the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is your host, Tyler Yonke. I really hope that you enjoy some of this preview show. I've enjoyed putting it together and kind of giving you a breakdown of what to expect. And we'll even do some predictions. If you have any comments that you'd like to make on this, be sure to put them in on our YouTube page there or anywhere else you have the podcast. And give us an idea of who you think is going to win the tour. We'll also give updates along the way, see how many days we can hold off on this, giving you some. Let's talk about the race. 106th edition of the Tour de France. Now look, the tour had some years where it did not happen at all due to world wars, but we're at the 106th edition. It starts in Brussels, Belgium, outside of France. It ends in Paris, France, 3,460 kilometers, 22 teams, 8 riders a team, 176 riders in the field, 21 stages, 2 rest days, 1 team time trial, 1 individual time trial, and a buttload of climbing, a lot of it above 2,000 meters. That's going to be kind of significant because you're going to have a bunch of Colombian riders in here. Well, not a bunch, but you do have some Colombian riders that are maybe need to get their chance to take over at the tour, and their being able to adapt to the high altitude might actually give them a leg up in this year's tour. Let's talk about some history, some milestone years. So 2014, 5 years ago, we had Vincenzo Nibali first place over Thibaut Pinot and Jean-Christophe Parod. You may remember this race. Pre-race favorites were Froome, Contador. They both crashed out of the race. Froome crashing early on. Remember, he broke his wrist. And then you had the stage to the kind of the cobblestone stage. It's a rainy one. He goes out twice. He wrecks down that day. He's a DNF. That day was actually really significant because it saw Nibali going to the fore, getting rid of all the other GC riders and basically making a stranglehold on the race from then on out. Nibali had that day was won by Lars Boom. Interestingly enough, second place was Jakob Fuglsang, who might be, he's one that's being talked about for this year's race. So obviously he can ride in the cobbles, which, could come in handy as well. Nibali took the yellow in that year's race after stage two win. He only relinquished it one day to Tony Gallopin, then back in yellow. There were 4 stage wins by Kittle that year. Pretty impressive. 10 years ago was back in 2009. Alberto Contador, Lance Armstrong battle. I mean, maybe a little bit like this year with Egan Bernal and Thomas. I don't think there's much animosity there. Egan Bernal seems like a nicer guy than Contador was. Thomas definitely seems like a nicer guy than Lance Armstrong. So you may not have such infighting, but you still may see a battle that you had seen back in that time. Also, that race was kind of the emergence of Bradley Wiggins. He was 4th, but then kind of got moved up to 3rd. We might see another year like that one. 15 years ago was 2004. Now, this was we're going to have some of these with Lance Armstrong wins. He won that. Andres Clodin was 2nd. Ivan Basso was 3rd. That one had the Alpe d'Huez time trial, which was won by Lance Armstrong. It also has an interesting thing that it was bookmarked that year by the prologue win and the stage 21 win, final day in Paris, were won by 2 guys in their first Tour de France. That was Fabian Cancellara winning the prologue and Tom Boonen winning stage 21. Kind of interesting. They both kind of emerging stars at the time, both doing their first Tour de France, and they get a win. That race also had there was stage 18 that was kind of showcased that disgusting sportsmanship in quotes, by Lance Armstrong when he chased down Filippo Simeoni, who had testified against him in the Dr. Ferrari issue. That was, it was, you know, the commentary at the time was not generous to anyone that was calling out dopers. Remember, Simeone had been a doper himself with Michele Ferrari. Anyway, that was a pretty disgusting time period. It also featured, that race featured Thomas Voeckler, a Frenchman, flamboyant guy. He was, did a lot of, like, he was fighting pretty hard to keep yellow, and it was actually impressive. I mean, he's an annoying guy to watch ride, but he did fight pretty hard. Maybe the most, the best fighting Frenchman at that point since Lafayette. I don't know. Another one that you had there was Richard Virenque. Richard Virenque won a stage, a mountain stage that year. He was with the Quick Step, whatever their contingent team was at the time. Broke down in tears. He was very happy. Just watching back some of the commentary when he's coming across the line and that whole day off the front, no real mention of his 1998 Festina affair. You know, that whole drug thing was just kind of the muerto with the commentating. They just didn't like to talk about it. And, you know, Lance and his whole cohorts at the time were really denying everything full force. 25 years ago, 1994, this was won by Miguel Indurain, Spanish rider. It was his fourth Tour de France win. He goes on to win the very next year, his fifth win, and then subsequently gets displaced out by Bjarne Riis and some of these others, and that whole era was kind of changing. But you look at the record here, or the riders that day. Second was Pietro Ugrimov of the Gewiss team, who's got quite a background as well. Third was Marco Pantani. That was Pantani's first Tour de France. Another interesting thing was there was only one American in the race that year. That was Frankie Andreu. He finished 89th. You know, not lackluster. I'm not in the much to talk about there, but it was only one American in the race, and we kind of had our dip, and then we came back within a resurgence, a real resurgence in U.S. cycling coming up in the next few years. You may have heard of Jamaluddin Abdujabarov. He was Uzbekistan rider, came out flying, I think, the year before that. He had won the green jersey. He won it again this year. This race had started in the U.K., and it was won. The prologue was won by a British cyclist, Chris Borman. 50 years ago, the 1969 Tour de France. This one's really fascinating. First Tour de France win by Eddy Merckx. You may have heard about him. He won with a gap over second place of 17 minutes and 54 seconds. Yes, 17 minutes over second place, 22 minutes and 13 seconds over third. Second was Roger Pinion, and third was Raymond Poulidor. You know, both good riders in their own right. Eddy also won the points jersey, the King of the Mountains jersey. I think he won the most the combativity award jersey, kind of a different one that they had where it was a mixture of all those ones. His team FEMA won the team time trial. They also won the team award. Eddy Merckx won five stages himself along with the team time trial. One of those stages he won was stage 22 into Paris that year, the final day in the yellow jersey, and he decides that he's going to win that. There in 67 and 68, the tour was contested just by national teams, but in 69, the commercially sponsored teams were back. The tour started with 13 teams, each with 10 cyclists, so they had 10 riders apiece that year. Eddy Merckx had been removed. Now, this is an interesting part. Eddy Merckx had been removed from the 69 Giro Italia in leading position because of a positive doping result and was initially not allowed to join the 1969 Tour de France, but his suspension was later lifted. Something you guys may not know is that Eddy Merckx had multiple positive tests. I've read the book Cannibal. I'll have to check that. It's Daniel Freeb of the Cycling Podcast. He wrote it. It's really good good book about Eddy Merckx and his career and some of his drug scandals that you might not know about. I'll flash that up on the screen for the YouTube people so you'll be able to take a look at and see if I could come up with what I remember that. Okay, the route. Well, this year, like I said, they start up in Brussels. You know, sometimes they usually clockwise or counterclockwise around France. This year, they do not at all, if you're looking at the map, hit the west coast or the western region at all. They pretty much start up in a Belgium area. They come down, they hit the Vosges Mountains, then they head down over to the Pyrenees, and then come back up over to the Alps. A lot of climbing. The Vosges Mountains are quite brutal themselves, and we're going to hit those earlier on in the, but you know, the big mountains, I think those are a little more pitchy. The big mountains obviously are the ones you're going to hit out in the Pyrenees and then in the Alps themselves. Okay, so stages 1 through 10. We've got, like I said, we start in Brussels. we'll just go through some of these stages and kind of the distance that they have and see if there's anything interesting in the first 10 stages. Stage one, like I said, is in Brussels. Then stage two, it's and we'll get to the actual stages kind of themselves on the profiles. The second stage is a team time trial. So they had come up with a team time trial pretty quickly with 27 kilometers. And then we finally get at stage three. They start in Belgium, but they head into France. You're looking at 214K, 215 the next day, 169. Stage six, we finally hit some climbing, and we'll talk about that stage itself. It actually has some gravel, and they've done that race. It's a few years ago, very, very steep pitch, and now they continue on past it. They're going a little bit further. That's the Plante de Belle Fuy. And then you got 230, 200, 170, 218. So most of that first, and then a rest day. So most of that first week, you've got one real good mountain day. You've got a team time trial. And then you've got a lot of stages right around the 200 kilometer range. The second week, you're going to start hitting mostly concentrated mountains. And you're going to have some of the mileage come down where you're having some just a little bit different type of stages. So after the first rest day on the 17th, about a week and a half in there, yeah, you start having getting from Albion to Toulouse, you're starting to head over to the Pyrenees, 160, then 200 kilometers. Then you have a time trial in Pau, individual time trial, 27 kilometers. Then the next day you have a finish 117 kilometers up the Col du Tourmalet. Very famous climb. They usually don't finish up there. I think they did, I want to say 2014 with Andy Schleck. And, no, it wouldn't have been 14, maybe 12, with Andy Schleck and Contador. Then you have another climbing stage. You have got two more climbs. So you have time trial, two climbing stages, a rest day. Then you have a few medium range days. And then you have three climbing days in a row in the Alps before you head over to Paris. Let's just break down some of these stages and what you have. You have time trials. Like I mentioned, there's only two time trials this year in the tour. You've got that stage two, 27 kilometer time trial. The course doesn't look too decisive. It's got a few little pitches up there. So you're usually not going to see any GC riders come out of the picture, but you usually see some, you do see some GC riders come out of the picture, I'm sorry, on a team time trial. Basically, you used to see this with like Euskaltel, some of the Spanish teams, and the teams just couldn't really hold up. There was a few years there. I think it was 04 where they started to do team time trials. You could only lose so much time. I don't see that they're doing that anymore. I'll have to look back into that. Sorry, I didn't do all my research. I'm just assuming not because I don't see that. They haven't done that in the last few years, but they were doing that where if you know you're only the placing, you were getting certain times. So you can lose 3 minutes, 4 minutes, but you're only going to be placed behind the winner, like a minute and a half, I think was the maximum you could lose. They haven't done that, but the time trial itself is only 27 kilometers. It's a little bit of a kicker in there, remember last year, Peter Sagan is actually in the yellow jersey and his team's midway through, they're going up a little rise. He's getting popped off the back and they just left him. You won't see that with a GC rider in yellow and teams, it depends. If you have a chance and you know, you're a certain rider you want to keep in yellow, the team would not do that. I don't foresee that to be a problem with most the GC riders with the climb that it's happening. It doesn't look too brutal there. Stage 13, that's your individual time trial, 27 kilometers, not a lot of elevation change, but it's a big chance for Geraint Thomas and to make up some time between him and whoever, either to increase time at that period or to try to gain some time. But I mean, it's only 27 kilometers, and so the stage is maybe more of a hope that someone other else flops by a top GC rider than a Thomas type stage. You really probably needed it in the 37 kilometer range to make it really advantageous for him. Sprint stages. Okay. There's sprint and sprint-ish type stages. And I categorize those as 10 possible. There are stages one and three are it should be sprinter stages, but they might not be because there's enough little kickers in there. Stage four is definitely a sprinter day. Stage five, possibly. Stage seven is definitely a sprinter day. Stage 10, 11, possible sprinter. 16 is definitely a sprinter day. 17, possible. And of course, stage 21, the finishing is a sprinter day. There's only 4 days that I would say are outright sprinter days. Six of the 10 could be escape days or Michael Matthew Sagan, GVA, Greg Van Avermaet type days. And I say that because there's enough kickers either near the end, some little climbing, you know, a bunch of cat threes and fours scattered across there. I mean, if Caleb Ewing, for as an example, Groenewegen just aren't quite doing it, you get one of those big sprinters out of the way, their team then is not going to be up there in the mix. And you're going to have to start having more room. You're going to have more room for a Michael Matthews. Look, Michael Matthews has come out and said that he is, you know, he doesn't know what to do with the tour. He was all prepared for Tom Dumoulin. Coaches said, hey, you've got to, you know, work on your climbing more and to be able to help him. So he said he wasn't training his sprinting. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, look, he's a World Tour rider, but, you know, sprinting, you have it or you don't. And so I know you work on other things and those things get better, but Michael Matthews is not going to lose some of his kick. And if he's been able to climb well, he's got a lot of opportunities in this race with all the climbing to actually still get some. And I've predicted that I think he will go well. I think that's why Sagan ends up winning the green jersey quite often, because he has the ability to go up some of these. He can sprint, you know, he can get a top five, top three when the big sprinters are there just by getting in the right position. You know, if there's a weird sprint finish. And then obviously the days where it's got a little bit of a kick to it or something unique, he could get a win. And that's why he does so well. So some between mountain sprint type of days, escape. I say there's about eight possibilities on that. Once again, stage 1, 3, 5, 8, 9, 10, 12, and 17. Smattering all throughout there. Now stage 1, the first one in Brussels, I say that because it has some of the you know, it's classics days that they've gone up some of these races there in Belgium. I actually predict that it's going to be more than likely a sprinter day. You know, stage 1, everyone's fit, everyone's gassed for those. I don't think those climbs are going to be too much, but you never know. So I put it as a possibility because there's just enough elevation throughout there that it could be a mix where these guys you know, could get away, and maybe the sprinters teams miss time. Likely though, you're going to be you're going to have a sprinters 9 and 12 especially are interesting days for that. Mountain stages. Well, these are climbing GC days. I mean, there's 6 definitive days for the pure GC ones. There's 6, 14, 15, 18, 19, and 20. Stage 18 is one of the ones that doesn't have a summit finish, but to start, because you see summit finishes for stages 6, 14, 15, 19, and 20. They all finish at a summit, and that's going to be a GC type of day. Stage 18 doesn't have a summit finish, but it starts with a Cat 3, has a Cat 1, and then 2 HCs followed by a descent down. So you're likely still going to see, you know, if you have a HC climb and then a descent down to the finish, you're not going to have, you know, sprinters or mid-range guys there, because all the action is going to be taking place on that climb up to, you know, the penultimate one. Then you have to remember that some of these early stages, you can see, you know, GC favorites lose some time. Stage 6 goes up the a few years ago, we saw this. It was stage 6 at the Tour, the Mir de Bretagne. It's when Tom Dumoulin crashed out. He got a flat. He drafted off the team car. He lost 53 seconds, and then he was docked another additional 20. So you never know what's going to happen with some of these riders getting out of contention, obviously, early on. And I do think it's a really good fact that they have stage 6 coming up right away in the mountains, because it'll thin things out just a little bit. Maybe you'll have one of those guys that just is completely out of contention, and instead of them and their team fighting for this GC spots up front, making it a little more tense on everybody, you're going to see, you know, let's say it's just take a random name out of the hat, Roman Bardet or something. Like maybe Bernal and Thomas, one of those guys just blows up on stage 6. Then you're going to basically, if that's the case, then you have one guy, less guy fighting for all this position. And so usually when you see one of these big mountain stages earlier on, unlike you saw in the Giro this year, it really helps, I think, to kind of solidify some of the racing and give you a little better. That's stage 6. So that one they did, I think it was 2017, and you saw that's when Iran, Froome, Mikel Landa, Roman Bardet, you had Barguil still in there. It came up this pitch that was really steep, and Froome started to lose. He lost maybe 15, 20 seconds by the top, and I think over the top, Mikel Landa won that just over Rigoberto Urán, and it was pretty impressive. Well, this year they go there. They have some gravel on that road, I guess, and then they go over that top, and instead of finishing there, they continue on up. So that could be a real launching spot for someone. And I mean, that's going to be pretty exciting to see. Okay, let's talk about your contenders. First of all, your sprinters. I went off of here and they have the sprinters listed for just out of ranking. And then once you do that, you have to kind of take a look back at, well, who's missing from the ranking that we should still be expecting. All right, so the top ranked sprinters for this year's tour, Elia Viviani of Dequena Quickstep, Alexander Kristoff of the UA Team Emirates. Remember, Gaviria is not riding this year, so he is your main guy for the sprinter for them. Peter Sagan of Bora, Dylan Groenewegen of Jumbo Visma, Michael Matthews, Team Sunweb, Caleb Ewing, Sonny Cabrelli, Matteo Trentin, Greg Van Avermaet. Andre Greipel is back with Team Arkea Samsic. Who else do we have here? Oliver Nason. And then there's just some other guys that can finish. Nasser Buhani. We saw him here at the Tour of California. Did not impress. Some others that were not mentioned, not ranked at least. Wout Van Aert. We saw him at the Dauphiné. He can sprint pretty good when he gets up there. Mark Cavendish and his teammate Edveld Bosenhagen. Look, Cavendish, I really hope he didn't show us anything when he was out here in California. It'd be nice to finally see him getting back in the groove. He's got Bosenhagen that can help him out there. So with the general classification riders, the ones that are picked for the ranking, and then we'll go through each one of those individually. You've got number one ranked rider for general classification coming in is Jakob Fuglsang. Okay. Thibaut Pinot, then Egan Bernal, Nairo Quintana, Alejandro Valverde, Steven Kruijswijk, Simon Yates, Emmanuel Bachmann, Geraint Thomas, Adam Yates, Wout Poels, Ilnur Zakarin, Dan Martin, Landa, Henrik Maas, Romain Bardet, Kwiatkowski, Alaphilippe. Others that not mentioned there. Well, we have Nibali, Richie Porte, Max Schachman, Michael Woods, Rigoberto Urán, TJ Van Garderen, Louis Menchies. These are all riders that, I mean, you're talking top 15s here, and there's always going to be that rider that, look, I just mentioned the 2014 there, where Thibaut Pinot was second and Jean Perraud was third. I mean, who? Actually, that guy, you look at his results, he had that race. He really did nothing, and then he did that race, and then he did nothing. It was kind of an interesting phenomenon, but you see that. So you never know some of these riders who are going to be in here. So let's just take a look first at last year's results and then kind of break down from there who we think are going to be left in here. You had Geraint Thomas obviously winning last year, Tom Dumoulin second, Chris Froome third, Primoz Roglic fourth, Steven Kruijswijk fifth, Bardet sixth, Landa seventh, Dan Martin 8th, Zakarin 9th, Quintana 10th, Jungles 11th, and Fuglsang 12th. So just Egan Bernal at 15th. I mean, it's so packed in here. So let's take a look. So Geraint Thomas, well, he's last year's winner, and therefore he gets top billing. And until we see otherwise, that's just the way it's going to be. He hasn't come in this year with stellar results. He hasn't done a lot of racing. He crashed out of the Tour de Suisse. But even with that, last year he kind of had to prove to the team that he was the guy. So he came in smoking hot. He was winning everything. And he hasn't been able to do that this year. I know, look, he had some issues with training. I'm sure, you know, problems with trying to focus due to having won the Tour. So that's always a problem. But until then, he's still the defending champion, so you're going to expect him to be the guy coming in this year. And until otherwise, you know, he's going to be the one there. Now, Steven Kruijswijk is the next on the list from last year. Why? Because places 2, 3, and 4 are not at this year's tour. You have Chris Froome, as we know, faked his crash, and he's not there, serving a drug suspension. That's all humor, because he actually did crash out. Tom Dumoulin hurt his knee at the Giro, tried to come back, was not able to make it back, so he's out. And then you have Primoz Roglic, who decided to focus on the Giro this year, and he's therefore not at the Tour de France. So fifth place was Steven Kruijswijk, and look, last year he was 608 behind Thomas. That year we had a team time trial of 35K. This year it's 27. You had a 31 kilometer time individual time trial. This year it's 27. So he still lost, you know, 42 seconds, another minute in the time trial. So even then, and that's a minute and a half, he still ended up losing 608. he'll have to actually climb better this year. And the race, like I said, if going above altitude, that may actually hinder a big diesel like Thomas more. And then you never know where Thomas is at. So that might start to equalize things for a Kruiswijk to do. I don't think the top step is something that he'll do. I mean, if you see him in the top three, that's what I would, that'd be a good move for him. Top five, like we saw him last year, is probably what to expect. But with those two, three, and four out, if you don't see a backfill from some of the guys behind, he could, once again, be on the podium. Top five, though, is totally doable. Roman Bardet. Last year, he was sixth and just 3 seconds down from being 7 minutes down. So he was a ways off. He can't time trial very well. His mid-pack for the team time trial last year, that was like 30 or so seconds off of that. But he really hasn't been back to his, you know, he was third in 2017. He was second in 2016. And even the third in 2017, remember, that was lost on the last day to Iran in the individual time trial. So he's been very close the last, you know, 2 years prior to that and not since. This year's route, though, is once again, I think it's built for Bardet. He's able to, you know, if he can knock down this freight train of Team Ineos and their two-headed monster attack, I think he can actually benefit and do well with the high-altitude training, the riding. They go through the Vosges Mountains, which are actually where he lives. So stage six, I think, is right over there where he's at, and that should be a big advantage for him. If he doesn't get back to the top five, though, it's going to be a loss. I mean, the papers out there have said it's now or never for he and Pinot. And so if those two guys are not able to come away with they say now or never for the win. So it actually sounds like France is saying, you got to win this year or, you know, put up or shut up. What are you going to do? I mean, these guys are set. It's in France. They haven't had a winner since Bernard Hinault. And Jean-Francois Bernard was in 87. He had a chance. He hasn't done that. So you're looking at 85 with the last time we've had a winner from France. It's been a long, long time for their national tour. Mikel Landa, I mean, look, he had a decent Giro, and he may be too tired as a GC threat. And is he going to ride it in support of Nairo? I mean, he can't win when he's the outright winner, leader, but he seems to not be able to win when he's in support of someone else because he's in support of someone else. So I don't know what this guy is going to do. I think maybe he needs... Are we going to be yelling free Landa again this year? I don't expect him to be on the top step, but I will reserve and hold judgment. Dan Martin. Dan was ninth last year, 10 minutes off. He can do better, and I do expect him to do so. He'll have the services of the newly mended Fabio Aru. We've talked about that. It was iliac artery surgery. So maybe that will be giving him some support. And also the thing there is I don't think Aru expects to be a leader at the tour, so he could give his undying support to Dan Martin, which would be a big help for him in this case. Oh yeah, let's talk about some others that weren't listed. Yates. I say Yates. I'm just assuming Simon and Adam, kind of a one-shot deal. I'm not sure which one is going for the overall win this year. Well, I think I know. We're looking at probably Adam Yates. Let's take a look at the last two based on their Tour de France and their Grand Tour exploits over the years. So Simon Yates, look, if he does, he's going for the Tour de France this year as well. He's racing in it. That means he won the Vuelta last year in 2018. Well, let's go back even further than that. He was in the Giro. He was in the lead. He was doing really good. And then he exploded on stage 18, or was it 19, of the Giro when Froome did his major exploit. Tremendous crash as far as physical on that day. Then ends up doing the Vuelta, makes a nice recovery, and kind of learned from his time at the Giro. Ends up winning the Vuelta. Then he comes in and does the Giro this year. He gets eighth overall in the Giro. Now he's doing the Tour. That's three successive Grand Tours in a row. Obviously, there's the winter break in between there, but that's pretty good for a young rider like himself. So he's in the Tour. I don't think he's the main focus for the Mitchelton Scott team. I think it's his brother, Adam Yates. Adam Yates has done, a comparison to Simon, he's done seven Grand Tours over the years. He's the one that's done the best. In 2016, he was fourth at the Tour de France, which was pretty impressive. You know, those two have kind of had a back and forth as to one's doing the Tour, then the other one is. I mean, Simon's had seventh at the Tour. He's got an 89. He's got a DNF in his first attempt, and he hasn't done the Tour since 2017. Otherwise, he's been focusing on the Giro and the Vuelta. obviously getting the win there. Back to Adam Yates. He was 29th at the Tour de France last year. He went in and helped his brother and got 45th at the Vuelta last year. Other than that, he's been 33rd at the Vuelta, 9th at the Giro in 2017, 4th at the Tour in 2016, which is kind of his breakout. And I think he got the young rider jersey as well, the youth category. Look, has either one won a Tour de France stage? There was not on the Adam. Simon did win a stage on 2017 when he was 7th place. I think that was a time when he everyone was getting caught by the banner that came down over the road, and he was able to stay away and win that day. Which one of these guys has the best chance? I think it's Adam. He was in the Dauphiné. He was doing pretty well there. He ended up pulling out and getting sick, but he's the one that's been the best rested for actually the team this year. What has his been his, like I said, he was 4th at the Tour. He's got 2nd at Tirreno Adriatico this year, 2nd at the Volta a Catalunya this year. Other than that, he's been, you know, won some stages at Tirreno, 4th in the Tour, Presidential Tour of Turkey in 2014. He won the overall. Impressive. Criterium du Dauphiné, he was 2nd there last year. So I think, look, you can't take away from both of these guys and their team. You know, they shredded out Caleb Ewing last year to bring on, basically to not have a sprinter at the Tour. So they have gone in full force for a GC team. And you, with these two riders, you're really looking at a strong contingent for, you know, look, I don't think you ever have to worry about Simon and Adam Yates having a conflict with each other over which one is supporting the other. You know, if it needs to be, they're going to be there for them. I mean, these are not the Gallagher brothers, you know, in the world of music. So you're looking to probably have a good showing. And I do expect Adam to do better than his 4th place. He should be one of the top 3 at the Tour this year. You expect him to be on the podium in the mix somewhere. And I would be looking for him to be knocking and to pushing the top guys the whole way. The time trialing has definitely come around for both of those guys, Adam and Simon. So look, if they do their brother doping correctly, alternated on and off, have one set back for the day and the next one take up, no one can notice the difference. I think you have a good chance of seeing an Adam Yates top podium and or top spot. Egan Bernal, probably the most talked about and expected rider, and talk about a lot of pressure on this guy. He's suddenly gone from, he's done one Tour de France last year. Was he 12th, 18th, something like that? For in the support of Froome and Thomas, and now he's expected to be the outright leader of the team. Matter of fact, we'll talk about that in a little bit. He's co-leader. So he did an impressive 2018 Tour de France. He won the Tour of California that year. He's won this year's Paris-Nice and the Tour de Suisse. He's 22, seems a lot of pressure, but he has been very impressive. You know, he's coming on the first race, I think, with Sky at the time was the Tour Down Under. Very impressive down there. 22, it's a lot of pressure to put on a young kid like that, but it will be interesting to see. And I would, you know, is anybody, I think it's just the talent that this guy, and by the way, I mentioned before, is he a mountain biker? He had done mountain biking. I remember now that he had raced with Nielsen Palace, actually, and they had both done mountain biking. So he can descend. And when you can descend for the mountain biker, you have a real strong chance of winning the Tour. That's a little facetious. All right, Jacob Fuglsang. Look, his best Tour de France finish was 7th in 2013. He was 12th in 2018, and otherwise has never cracked the top 10 in a Grand Tour. Look, his 2019 has been very impressive, more than impressive. He can climb, he can TT, but with less, this route that he won at the Dauphiné this year is less than stellar, the route itself. And by the way, winning the Dauphiné does not necessarily relate to winning the Tour or even doing well. He won the Dauphiné in 2017. Now, granted, he did crash out or DNF that year, so on the Tour, so he wasn't able to really put that into full force. But winning a one-week race and even having an impressive spring campaign as he's done doesn't necessarily relate to the Tour. But I would not be surprised at all to see him do well, and because I just think that his level has kind of come up. And winning a lot, that confidence can really give you something. You know, look at, I think that was Thomas last year. He won so much. You come into the Tour, you're a little more expecting that. And when you start to have those results, it just feeds on, well, this is what I do. I win. So we'll see what Jacob can do. And I expect him to be actually be able to climb with like a Garrett Thomas. We'll see if those two guys though can hang on to the, like the little guys, the Kreuzwicks, the Bernals, Nairo Quintana. All right. Rigoberto Urán. Urán was very impressive with his 2017 second place. Like I said, he got the second just over narrowly beating Romain Bardet in the overall and getting him on the time trial on the last day. He didn't finish last year. He struggled on stage 12 up to Alpe d'Huez. He had crashed on the Paris-Roubaix stage 9 of that same race. So he was having some issues. He wasn't able to even hang on. Rigo has been hurt again this year, and so he's been trying to recover. He did look good in the Route d'Occitanie, getting third place to Alejandro Valverde by, I think, 17 seconds or somewhere around there. So that was actually pretty impressive. He will also have some good support in Woods and TJ, Michael Woods and TJ Van Garderen. Both of these climbers have potential top 10 placings. I mean, TJ has been fifth there before. Michael Woods, I think, has got a top 10 in the Vuelta. He's got that third place at the World Championships, second place at Liège, Bastogne-Liège last year. He can obviously go well. He's getting more and more confidence. He was looking well at the Dauphiné until he got sick and had to pull out. He's won a stage at the Vuelta as well. So with those two guys, if they're climbing well, that could be a big boost to Urán. Whether Urán is fully recovered and he's able to take on this mantle and finish out is yet to be seen. But I think with those two guys and their team, actually with the way they can time trial, they should be doing well in the team time trial. Rigoberto can usually time trial fairly well himself. So coming to that last individual time trial, it should be good for Urán. I'd like to see him do well. He's a little more of a question mark, kind of like Thomas in a sense. Different riders, but there's a lot of question marks on guys this year. Speaking of another question mark, I mentioned it just a little bit ago, Nairo Quintana. What do you say about Nairo? He's on the team with Valverde and Landa. He's expected to be the leader, but he hasn't impressed. He won the Vuelta in 2016, and since then he got second at the 2017 Giro, and then eighth at the Vuelta, and then a 10th and 12th at the Tour. I mean, he just seems to be coming down. But like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of climbing above 2,000 meters at this year's Tour de France. And look, he's from an area that he reigns supreme up in the high mountains, the high altitude. They say that helps. So we'll see if that does. I mean, the guys on TV always say, look, they're from there. They can do it. He's used to living at high altitude. I think that makes a difference. You know how to ride. You know your body a little bit different for that. And so that could actually help bring him back to the limelight this year. Richie Port. Well, besides Wallonga Hill, Santos Tour Down Under, Richie hasn't done much in the last few years. He crashed out with Dan Martin in the 2017 Tour de France. We remember that big, big, bad break on his leg. He DNF'd the last 2 years, so he wasn't there as well last year. He crashed out, I think it was stage 9, the Paris-Roubaix stage with BMC last year. Horrific for him. He's looking to come back. His team's okay. He's got Bauke Mollema, who did well at the Giro. He's got Ciccone, I think, and a few decent climbers that should help him. But he doesn't have a great team, not like something like Ineos, who just looks stacked for this year. Lastly, Thibaut Pinot. Like I said, Thibaut got second in the 14 Giro, Tour de France. When you look at his results over the years, he's got a smattering of top 10s, a few in the top 10, 16th at the Tour de France and 15. Otherwise, it's all DNFs or top 10s. So if you're betting on him getting a top 10, I would do it. If you're also betting on him getting a DNF, I'd take that bet as well, because one of those are likely to happen. Look, France is all about him, or they want a French winner, and it's Thibaut Pinot or Romain Bardet. I think that's their hopes for now. I don't think Guillaume Martin is going to be doing it with Wanty Groupe-Gobert. He's a decent climber, but he's not a top 50. He's a top 15 rider. And so who else do you have? Warren Barguil. I don't know what he's done. You know, 2017, he had a very impressive ride with Sunweb. And I think he won at the stage we were talking about, where stage 6 is the Plata de Bay. And he has a chance of doing well. But then he floundered after that. He went into the Samsic team. He gained a bunch of weight. He hasn't been really riding anywhere near his potential there. So once again, it's on Pinot. And If he doesn't win, Roman Bardet doesn't win, I don't know what's going to happen to these guys. He was well-placed in the 2018 Giro, if you remember. And I think that was the day that he just exploded immensely. I think it was the stage 18 when Froome kind of did his vampire, sucking all the energy out of Fabio Roux and Thibaut Pinot and into himself to win the stage and the overall. So he failed completely. Like I said, he DNFs or he gets top 10. Have I missed anybody? There's probably someone out there. Why don't you join in, write to us and tell us who you think is going to win. My predictions are, look, I think you're going to, unfortunately, I think Bernal is going to be a tough guy to beat. He's going to be someone, and I say unfortunately because I'm kind of looking for someone else besides besides the Ineos train to do it. I think Thomas still has a good chance of doing well. I actually believe that you're going to have a shot here of, I wouldn't be surprised with Fuglsang. All these guys I mentioned, I don't think a Dan Martin's going to win. I'm kind of pulling for Steven Kruijswijk and Rigoberto Urán, but I honestly believe you're going to have a battle between Thomas, Bernal, and maybe Quintana. So that's probably my top three right there. And I reserve the ability to come back and make corrections to this as I see fit. Some things that make you go, Well, Tim Ineos, they've now designated Bernal and Thomas as co-leaders. If you remember before Thomas and before Froome faked his crash, there was a news report. It's like the day before Brailsford had come out and said, Thomas is our guy. Thomas is not our guy. Froome's our guy. We're kind of going there with Froome, but, you know, we'll see how Thomas does. And that was like said at the time. I bet they wish they can pull that back because they probably are going, We didn't really necessarily want to say that. Now Thomas is our guy. Then they have the Tour de Suisse, and Bernal comes out as you know, a semi-leader. So they've now said they are co-leaders of the Tour. I kind of want to backtrack on some of my prediction. I think I would not be surprised because Bernal has been so impressive that he does well. I don't think his Tour de Suisse win, I'm not basing any of my predictions on how we just did at the Tour de Suisse. I didn't think that was anything special or super impressive based on who was there. Like I said, you had Rohan Dennis as the second place. Rohan Dennis, like I mentioned, has won the Colorado Classic, but what else has he done as far as stage race stuff? I mean, I'm sure he's done something, but nothing along the lines of, hey, he's going to be the next Grand Tour winner. There's not enough. So there was two time trials in that race that helped Rohan Dennis quite a bit, but there was no one really else there that was competing on the climbing for Bernal, and he didn't win by a ton. It was pretty close. So I'm not showing his Tour de Suisse as something that's going to really ignite me as to being full on the Bernal train. With that said, I think it's interesting because Thomas, the team must know some internal testing to give those two dual billing. Otherwise, they would just go with Thomas. He's won it last year. He won it in impressive fashion. I mean, look at who he was winning over last year. It was over Dumoulin, over Froome, Roglic, it was impressive. Bardet, all these guys, it was very impressive. So to see him kind of get the dual leadership with Bernal, one, it says that they have a lot of confidence in Bernal, and two, maybe they're still not having a lot of confidence in Thomas. It might help Thomas. Maybe he's a come from behind guy. You know, everything's on his shoulders, and he's going to end up doing well. Some Tour de France resources. So where can you find your Tour de France? Well, you can watch it on TV. Obviously, NBC covers it. I personally I don't have cable or satellite, so I buy the NBC Gold app, and you pay like $20, $30, and I have it for the entire year, so it's time to renew it right before the tour. Got to make sure I do that. That's one thing to do. If you do these kind of things, maybe it's Fubo or some of these other services, make sure you're up to date and that your annual subscription is good to go so you can sign in that first morning and be able to watch it. I do the NBC Gold one. Once again, I could stream it on any of my Roku TVs at home. Laptop in my office or on the go, and my iPhone. So I've always got the tour able to go anywhere I want. It has replay. It's really good for me. It's one of the great resources. And one of the best things about it too is it gives you the ability. Am I getting sponsored by these guys? No, but it gives you the ability to use the US feed, which is usually Phil Liggett, and it was Paul Sherwin until his unfortunate passing. But I think they have Bob Roll with them this year. And then the other option is the Aussie feed, which is Matthew Keenan and Robbie McEwen, which I absolutely loved. I felt like it was a difference between here's your entry level commentary. You're new to bike racing. Let's go with Phil Liggett. If you are a little bit more into cycling, you know it, you've raced, let's go with Matt Keenan and Robbie McEwen. They're a little, they don't dumb it down so much. So personally, I've enjoyed them. And hey, who doesn't like a good Aussie accent too? It'll shrimp on the Barbie. Podcasts. Here's some podcasts I listened to during the tour. One thing that's great about the Tour de France, we all know France is what, 9 hours ahead of us. The race happens in the afternoon over there. It's done and good. They get their interviews. They throw up a podcast. It's mid-afternoon. I then get to hear these podcasts because for them, they're coming out the next morning. But for me, they're coming out that same day. The cycling podcast, it's with Lionel Burney, Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb. It's probably one of the biggest podcasts out there. They cover the tour. All those guys are out there. They followed along. SBS Cycling, that's Australian. They have a podcast. It's pretty good. ITV, it's European sports television. I don't remember all the guys' name there. I think they had Chris Boardman. David Miller was in there as well. A bunch of good guys there. BBC Bespoke podcast. It's BBC guys. They do a daily podcast updates. A lot of these you see kind of interacting with each other. They'll have different guys on from different ones. But once again, a lot of them are like 30-minute podcasts. So you can just get some extra stuff, interviews of writers, some insights you just don't see because these guys are at the tour. The Move. If your bowels can handle it, this is a move that they probably would like. It's the Lance Armstrong, JB Haggard, I think his name is, podcast. This one has, with Lance, you can imagine you can have some incredibly in-depth inside knowledge that you're getting from this, but it also has excruciatingly low level insight, not insight, of you know, cycling 101 banter as well. So I don't know how it goes. It mixes between super in-depth and super not in-depth, and it sometimes can be excruciating. But anyway, that's one. If you don't mind former doper Lance Armstrong talking to you, they have sometimes some good commentary there. Velo News, Cycling Tips, and Cycling News. There's all those three that they'll should have someone that sometimes they do them daily. Sometimes they don't. You know, Velo News did, I think maybe they're going to do this. They did a little preview of a show that they're going to do. It was with Bobby Julich and Angus Morton, Lachlan's brother. They did it during the tour of California. It sounded like it was recorded in a bathroom, but from a near adjacent open window. It was some of the worst. I mean, come on, guys, get a microphone. You can, if you want some help, contact me. I'll give you some suggestions of how to do that. But anyway, those are your podcasts, your stream and stuff. I'm sure there's more out there on YouTube. Why don't you give me an idea of what you consume? If there's something I missed and you think it's great, send it my way and I will check it out as well. Anyway, thanks again for checking into the tour. We'll go over some real quick here. I think Thomas has the best chance at winning. I think you're going to possibly get a French Romain Bardet or Thibaut Pinot in the top three. I think Steven Kruijswijk is going to have a good race as well. And there's a good chance that Rigoberto Urán is also going to creep into the top five. Sprinters are going to be good, but I expect Dylan Groenewegen to come out with about four victories this year. I think he's got a great chance. He's one of the best sprinters you have going. You're going to get a Viviani win, and you're also going to get probably a Viviani relegation at some point. You probably are going to see Peter Sagan win the green jersey. I expect that to happen again with enough climbing. And once again, I think Michael Matthews is going to win at least one or two stages. So mark that here. Thank you for joining us for the Between Two Wheels podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. Give us some of your feedback. Share the show if you'd like. Also make some comments. It helps in all the algorithm stuff. You can do that anywhere the podcast is found on the podcast, YouTube, iTunes, Overcast.fm, Podbean. Also check us out on our YouTube channel. And once again, enjoy the tour.